which I think you are.
See, I should probably mute myself.
Hello, Dr. Young, how are you?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. And is Dr. Strader with you?
He had to go to the East Coast for a family reunion. And so he will be joining us virtually in a little bit.
Okay.
Turn
this mic
off. I did. Okay.
Yeah, you have a big sound effect behind you, Phil. Keep talking. There is background noise, you know, the resounding feedback.
Okay, how's that?
Sounds like there's two speakers on. Maybe there's a speaker on a computer.
Use your camera. See, turn it off.
You know, Phil, I think you might want to check Dr. Young's computer. He might need to mute that.
Okay, not to.
So is that the last thing you have to do? It's bigger than the audio show. So we didn't have much trouble working on it. Oh, turn your mic on that. Good idea. It's amazing.
Except they won't be able to see you now that you turn your camera.
I can turn it back on. I don't think that's it. That's still possible. Should I go to just a different room altogether?
No, IT banking. What does that mean? I've got my mic set up.
Okay.
He said,
"Now I'm going to be judged."
Well, I can hear the
still just telling you. That's right. I don't think it's going to be too annoying.
You sound a little bit better, Phil, but there's still a little bit of a feedback.
All right, let me try shutting you off.
And your back starts.
What about it? Can you turn the volume off on your computer, Phil?
Can you hear me?
Okay, testing.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, that sounds pretty good.
Okay, I just kind of went into this office space. Looks like a break room.
This
might be the best way to do it.
Okay, well, Commissioner Haas, are you ready?
Okay.
Ready to go.
Thank you, sir. Okay.
It is not 5:10. I want to welcome all of you to this work session with Los Angeles County Board of County Commissioners. And I want to welcome you, Dr. Young, and certainly we look forward to the information that you have for us. So at this time, I'm going to ask Commissioner Tony Haas to give us an invocation. We'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Lord, for another day. Be with us today as we have our discussions and help us to come to a great outcome. All these things we ask in your name. Amen.
And please join me on the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, divided, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Mr. Dorenkamp, do you have any roll call, please?
I think you're muted.
Commissioner Tony Haas, Commissioner Felix Lopez present.
No, I can hear you.
Commissioner Haas?
Here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Here. Do we have any changes to the agenda, Mr. Dorenkamp?
No changes, Commissioner.
Motion to approve the agenda?
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second that motion?
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are. Well, thank you so much. This work session, it is to get some information from Dr. Young and Dr. Schrader on substance abuse treatment. And so certainly want to welcome you, Dr. Young, and the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner Lopez. It's just an absolute pleasure to be here. I've literally been dreaming of putting a clinic in Trinidad, such as we're proposing, for 3.5 years now. So this is kind of a dream being realized for me. And I hope to get your support this evening, for this project. Let's see, let me go ahead and see if I can share my screen. I need.
Now I think you have permission.
Okay. All right. I hope this is the newest.
While you're setting that up, Dr. Young, I wanted, on behalf of our fellow Commissioner Luis Lopez, sends his greetings and regrets. He is not able to join us tonight, but certainly sends a good gesture of welcome to you, sir.
Great. Thank you. All right. So again, my name is Steve Young, and I'm an addiction physician. I'm the medical director for Elevate Healthcare, which is an opioid treatment program in Pueblo. And then my colleague, he's going to be joining us here shortly, Don Stater. He's away attending a family reunion, but he's going to kind of join, like I say, shortly. This is actually a picture of our clinic in Pueblo. It's 212 West 13th Street. It's about three blocks west of I-25 on 13th Street. So that's our home office. That's our home base where we're currently seeing patients. And this is basically our proposal. We're proposing to open a combination opioid treatment program and detox facility in Trinidad. We'll be treating primarily patients with opioid use disorder, but also to a lesser degree, treating patients with alcohol use disorder. We're going to be getting referrals, we assume, from both law enforcement and the emergency department. law enforcement, police, you know, see someone on the streets or in public, they're intoxicated. Right now, those patients are, you know, usually they would usually take them either to jail or to the emergency department, you know, for some sort of a medical evaluation. And, you know, if with this proposed facility, especially with the detox component, they could just bring them to us. So that I think would help out law enforcement quite a bit. And then in the emergency department, in addition to being an addiction physician, I'm also an ER doc and have been for quite a while. And it might be Don joining us now. And so I know the value when these patients are seen in the emergency department and they're still intoxicated, and you basically need a disposition. You need somewhere to send those patients. They're not ready to be, you know, streeted. We used to call it treat and street. They're not ready to be discharged to the street. And so a detox facility is a great solution there. So I think the community could benefit hugely from that. And let's see. And then Signal is an MSO for this region, and they have offered really startup funding. So they're willing to kind of give us money to get things started, to find a location, get some staff initially, and kind of just get going with the project. So we already kind of have that lined up. And then, you know, many of you, or most of you probably don't know what an OTP or opioid treatment program is. And it's a clinic that treats patients with opioid use disorder. They are heavily regulated by both the federal agency of SAMHSA, federal agency, obviously, of the DEA, the state agency of the Behavioral Health Administration, and then CARF, which is kind of the equivalent of JCO for hospitals. They're our certifying body. So very, very heavily regulated clinics, much more so than any other medical facility in Trinidad. It's important to know that OTPs are really the only source for methadone treatment. In the community, you'll see physicians prescribe methadone for chronic pain, but it's actually against federal regulations to prescribe it to treat patients who are struggling with opioid use disorder. And then again, methadone is in our clinics, in the opioid treatment programs, the methadone is administered. So the patient comes to the clinic, there's a dosing nurse, a nurse in the clinic that gives the patient, administers the patient the methadone. Patients are required to dose in clinic, especially at the first part of their treatment. When they first come into treatment, they're usually not very stable. And so they have to come in every day, at least five to six days a week. Pretty much most people get take-home doses for Sunday, but otherwise they're coming to the clinic every day, sometimes for months, and sometimes even for years, depending upon their stability. And of course, the nearest clinics are in Pueblo, quite a ways away. Then the question, why does Trinidad need an opioid treatment program, an OTP? Well, obviously, there's quite a travel burden associated with, you know, going to Pueblo, the existing clinics. Most of our patients are Medicaid patients, and they rely on the Medicaid ride services. So most of our patients that we treat in Pueblo, they come up 5 days a week by these Medicaid rides, and those services have told me that each ride, you know, costs the state about $400. You know, that's what they're paid. So that's, you know, $2,000 a week for most patients. So very hefty price associated with that, and then obviously, you know, the time is very significant. I mean, a minimum of 3 hours, you know, round trip that it takes, you know, the patient. One of our big goals in treatment actually is most of our patients are unemployed. And one of the biggest goals is to get them jobs, to get them employed. Well, if they have this, you know, incredible travel burden of, you know, 3 to 4 hours, say, round trip with all the waiting and whatnot, it makes getting a job really difficult. So that's a major problem. And then it really just discourages people from entering treatment in the first place. It's just too overwhelming to get up to. The thought of getting to Pueblo every day is just too much. So they don't get treated. We estimate maybe 18, I think it's actually now a little higher than that, 18% of the patients at our clinic are from Los Animas County. So it's a pretty significant number. And there are four OTPs in Pueblo, and I estimate there are probably over 100 patients currently from Trinidad that are being treated in Pueblo. So it's a sizable amount. And we know if that's the number that's actually being treated, that there are a lot more in the community that just aren't getting treated. So pretty significant numbers. And this is an unfortunate slide. This is the fentanyl overdose death rate by county. And tragically, as you can see here, Los Animas County is actually the highest in the state. On my slide, you can't really see here, but yeah, you can't see all the counties, but the rates really are the highest. So I obviously, you know, Trinidad, Los Animas County is in great need. And then this brings up the biggest question, really, is methadone effective? And the answer is resoundingly yes. It's extremely effective. The number needed to treat is 2. And number needed to treat means how many patients do you need to treat to see a significant benefit? And 2 is phenomenal. It's just extremely good. If you look at aspirin being given for prevention of stroke and heart attacks, the number needed to treat is like 250 patients. A blockbuster medication, you know, some of the statins or the cholesterol medications or the PPIs, the Prilosex and things like that, you know, their number needing to treat might, you know, would be, they would love to have 7 or 8 or 10. With methadone, it's 2. It's extraordinarily effective. And a good friend of mine is an addiction physician as well as an emergency physician. And he likes to compare methadone to insulin. And he says the only medication that's really more effective than methadone is insulin, which is, you know, obviously saying quite a bit. The treatment that we provide, the comprehensive treatment we provide with the medication and all of the counseling and case management is evidence-based. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of high-quality studies, which are pretty, incontrovertible. You know, that this is an effective treatment, and it's supported and even encouraged, by federal and state agencies. I mean, Office of Behavioral Health, they're now BHA, but they are extremely enthusiastic about a clinic being opened in Trinidad. And then this leads, and I was talking to Phil prior to the meeting. And it was amazing. I mean, I sat down, told him what we wanted to do. And this is one of the absolute first questions he had. It's a great question. It's really at the source of a lot of the stigma around treatment with methadone. Is the question, is treating someone with methadone, is that just trading one addiction for another? I mean, if they're using fentanyl on the street, and they're smoking fentanyl, and we get them into clinic, and we get them, you know, hooked on methadone, is that really better, you know, for the patient? And of course, you know, I believe it is. But I will say I share or I understand that stigma, and I understand this kind of bias. Because I had it, I shared it. I was in the emergency department for years and years and years treating patients with opioid use disorder, patients in withdrawal. And honestly, I thought, hey, you know, they would come in and they'd be treating with methadone, they'd miss some doses or whatever. That's what put them in the emergency department to begin with. But I looked down on them. I mean, I thought, oh my God, these methadone clinics, you know, they really should be shut down. So I understand, I really do understand that bias. I understand that stigma. But it's important to remember there's a difference between addiction and dependence or physiologic dependence. Addiction involves behaviors. It involves drug-seeking behaviors. It involves using substances despite negative consequences and being compelled to do that. That's what surrounds addiction. And if you talk to people with these disorders, you know, they spend almost the moment they wake up till the moment they go to bed. Just trying to not be sick, trying to not be in with withdrawal. That's their life. And so that's the addiction part. Examples of this would be newborn babies. Oftentimes when a newborn is born to a woman who used opioids during her pregnancy, about half the time they have withdrawal. They actually go into withdrawal after birth. Well, that's an evidence of a physiologic dependence. It's not an addiction, right? You know, babies, newborns, you know, aren't born with behaviors. So that's a common one, you know, that makes sense. It's like, yeah, they're physiologically dependent. Let's treat their dependency. Let's get them over this withdrawal. But there's no behaviors associated with that. Another example I like to mention is Zoloft. You know, that's a super, super common medication used to treat anxiety and depression. Well, there's a withdrawal syndrome that's been described with Zoloft. If you stop taking Zoloft abruptly, you will have withdrawal. Well, most people would say you're not addicted to the Zoloft. You have a physiologic dependence. When you want to get off of Zoloft, your doctor needs to taper your dose, gradually drop your dose and take you off, not stop it abruptly. Once again, you're not addicted to the Zoloft, you're just dependent on it. And you know, no one really considers Zoloft a substance of abuse. And that gets to this next point, methadone. It really just is not a good substance of abuse. It's really not equivalent to heroin, to fentanyl, to oxycodone. Mostly because a good substance of abuse, like let's say fentanyl, most people smoke the fentanyl, the illicit blue fentanyl tablets. When you smoke those tablets, you get a high in less than a minute. It automatically, it just goes from the lungs into the bloodstream, into the brain very, very quickly. And that's a fundamental characteristic of a good substance of abuse, is rapid onset. Well, methadone has a very slow onset. It takes about, after you ingest it, it takes 3 to 4 hours before you feel the peak effects. So right there, it's really not abused in the same way that those other opioids are abused. Let's see. So let's keep going. And then, and we can come back to that question because I think that's a super, super important question. If people have, you know, additional questions on top of that, Don and I would really like to answer those. And then that gets me to, you know, flatly, OTPs change lives. I've seen it just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times in my relatively short career in addiction medicine. It saves lives by preventing overdoses. We know that. I mean, patients are much safer in treatment. It keeps patients out of jails and prisons. You know, which we can all agree is a good thing. It helps patients get jobs, as I mentioned earlier, and become contributing members of society. Once again, we all want that. It allows patients to reestablish relationships with family and friends. And I see that. I mean, I've just seen it hundreds and hundreds of times, and it's wonderful to see those reconnections. And then maybe most importantly, it gives kids back their parents. You know, we oftentimes we get kind of lost in the addict, the person who's using the substance, but many of them have children. And those children, you know, are in foster care, they're with other relatives. Reuniting those families, getting parents in treatment, getting them doing well, and then getting the kids back with the parents. We know by studies that's absolutely what's best for the kids. So, you know, that's one of the most gratifying things about what we do, I think, in my mind. The other thing is OTPs make communities better. I believe this emphatically, and that's kind of my big sell to you, that if we move into the community, we open a clinic, we open a detox, Trinidad will be made better. You know, I firmly believe that. And these are just a few of the things that I think we can accomplish in the community. Decreased crime, decreased homelessness on the streets. A lot of our patients are homeless. I know that. They tell us that. Our counselors and case managers, when they come into treatment, that's the other, you know, component probably you do before you get jobs, is you find shelter. You get them off the street. Decreased infectious diseases, hepatitis C, HIV, syphilis. Increase property values. I have a friend who has a condo in Seattle, and they have, just like Denver does, you know, they have a horrible, horrible homeless situation. And it actually, it's been shown studies, it decreases property values. We know that, you know, so that's one of the benefits to a community, increased tax base. If these people are getting jobs, if our patients are getting jobs that are spending money in the community, paying taxes, once again, they can be contributing members of the community, and that's a win-win. And then here, this is kind of like the next to last slide I think I have, and then we can kind of open it up to questions. But I think it's important to know who's behind Elevate. Are we snake oil salesmen? Are we, just coming from Denver and wanting to put a clinic in your community so we can make money? I would argue no, those things don't apply to us. Again, my name is Steve Young. I've been doing advocacy work on the state level in addition to operating being the medical director for several OTPs, but I've been working at the state level advocating around addiction issues for, almost 5 years. I've been the co-chair of the treatment work group for the Colorado Consortium for Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention. I'm the current president of the Colorado chapter of American Society of Addiction Medicine. And then again, I'm the medical director for multiple OTPs, most notably in Pueblo. So I have a lot of experience. We're in this for the long game. And I think we've demonstrated a lot of commitment, and we would bring that dedication and commitment to Trinidad with us. And then the next slide, I think he's on, my colleague Don Stater. This is kind of a list of his accomplishments, which I have to tell you before he comes on, this is like a tiny snippet of his accomplishments. He is extremely well known in the addiction community and beloved. He's done some amazingly innovative things. He is an innovator supreme. And I just have to tell you that, because this really can't really get that sense just from this list of accomplishments. But with that, I'd like to introduce Don Stater. Are you on?
I am, friends. And I apologize. I noticed when I got on that my project manager had changed my profile picture. So I am not a redhead. That's the first thing. The second of thank you, Steve. So much of what you said resonated with me. And I think that one thing that I just want to share is our commitment to this. I apologize. I couldn't be there in person. If I was in Colorado, I would be. I'm actually at my in-laws family reunion, if you want to look behind me. So I'm just ending myself in the doghouse by taking a little bit of time away to jump on a call. But this is so incredibly important. And I think that both Steve and I, who both of us are from the emergency department community, we are ER docs, and we've seen this go wrong for the first part of our careers. And we're just so committed to getting this right, I think, for the rest of our careers, that this has really become a calling to both of us. And we do view this opportunity in Trinidad to come in, to be a specific partner to your community, to really help heal, those who struggle with addiction in your community. Really is a God-given mission that we hope we have the opportunity to partner with you to accomplish. So I just want to express that. I'll let you finish up, Steve, and then I'm here to answer questions and, of course, to contribute.
Okay, great, Don. Here's our contact information. What I can do also is maybe I can send this to Paula. And maybe she could distribute that to others. I know that's my personal cell phone. That's my personal non-work email. And I think Don did pretty much the same thing with his phone number. And I encourage you, if you have questions, please reach out. Look forward to that. So with that, though, I would like it to open it up to discussions. I mean, I know you've got to have some concerns, questions and concerns about, bringing a clinic such as we're proposing to Trinidad. Oh, Commissioner Lopez, I think you're
ready. Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today, both Dr. Young and Stater. And please, we don't want to get you away from your family reunion. One thing that, first of all, when it comes to our work sessions, we collect information, then we'll come together. And I think one of the things that we have going on, as you show the map, is the prevalence of opioids in Los Angeles County. That is, I serve, I'm the vice chair of Region 19 for the opioid project that's coming out of the Attorney General's office. And so we are working really hard with our communities, with the nine counties, to bring the resources necessary to, at the very least, ameliorate some of the problems that we're facing. But I want to give a welcome also to Mrs. Kim Gonzalez. She is the executive director of Los Animas Huerfano County's public health. And so I know, I see her name, I hope she's there. I know she works pretty close with the community, but let me ask you one thing. I have heard, and again, not being the MD, rather I deal with numbers. You know, one of the things that I have heard that methadone actually becomes an enabler. And you said it, Dr. Young, you know, one of the things is one drug for another. What is, you know, the public perception? What are the statistical analysis that you see of success rates when, A, working with the stigma of methadone, and then B, creating all the ancillary responses, like you said, you know, people go to work, you increase property value, so on and so forth. We're saving lives. I think that's what you're saying in there. But as the stigma surrounding this whole thing of being one of those enabling communities to trade one drug for another, what can you just kind of walk us through that?
Don, do you want to take a stab at that, or do you want me to kind of talk more?
Yeah, for sure. I can take a first stab at that. And thank you. And I think you're right that coming from our communities, we are, you know, I came to methadone and to understand how important methadone is later in my career. Because before, I think I also heard just what I think are common phrases repeated in communities, which, oh, it's trading one drug for another. Oh, now there's going to be all these people milling about our community, kind of waiting to go to methadone. And that this is really going to attract a different clientele that maybe our community does not want. And they've actually studied this specifically. And what they find is that that's not exactly what happens with these. And in fact, that by allowing patients to seek treatment within their communities, instead of shipping them sometimes, like Steve is mentioning, all the way to Pueblo, et cetera, is we commit people to failure when we do those types of things. Treatment really does have to happen surrounded by friends, family, people that they love, places that they grew up in. Community is the solution to addiction. And what methadone clinics do is to allow a place with really, let's be honest, the most frequent contact with medical professionals that almost anyone can get, because they're coming into a clinic and they're seeing a nurse, they're seeing a doctor, they're seeing an addiction counselor daily or almost, you know, several times a month. That they actually have contact with someone who's a medical professional who's advocating for them and in their corner, fighting for them to get sober and fighting for them to get into recovery, right? That's something that you see nowhere else in medicine. So as soon as we realize that, hey, this is actually not an area that people are just going to get drugs, which I think is the common, you know, the common perception, people are going there to get treatment, and that's a whole different ballgame. And we've seen time and time again that methadone is a place that people get into recovery and get their lives back and become active members of their community. And then the other thing that I would say about methadone is it's more important than ever. And the reason why is because I think some people have understood buprenorphine used to have a really bad name. And I think it's getting better over time because people are seeing people get better. But fentanyl has made transition to buprenorphine much more difficult. And both Steve and I, as addiction specialists, can tell you that it's much harder to get people on buprenorphine than it used to be when we had heroin and not fentanyl. So the importance of methadone as a first-line tool for patients has actually increased over the course of the last 2 or 3 years as we've really entered into our concrete fentanyl crisis. So in terms of just the evidence, I think that it's been really, really impactful. And then I also say that if you go to a well-run methadone clinic, here's what you'll notice about them, that they don't look like a methadone clinic. There's not people loitering outside. There's not all these things about you know, there's not all these kind of things that we conjure up sometimes in our head of what these places should look like, especially if it's well run and we have, you know, community behind us and we can set guardrails for what we expect of patients, then I think we can really have a beneficial impact to the communities we aspire to serve.
So now on that note, you mentioned, Dr. Young, that methadone takes about 4 hours to peak. You get someone that is actually already coming on a withdrawal. How soon does that individual begin to normalize? I mean, if it's going to take 4 hours, I would imagine that once they have this in their system, is going to be, the impact is going to be a bit more rapid than the 4 hours. And then how long does that stay on their system, and how often? I know you mentioned perhaps on a daily basis, they've got to come in into the clinic to get the next treatment.
Well, okay, so the half-life of methadone, you know, how long it takes for half of it to be metabolized, is about 24 to 36 hours. So it lasts a very, very long time. And that's a really, really important characteristic behind methadone that makes it so effective in treating opioid use disorder, because the real damage to the brain occurs during the withdrawal state. So methadone allows patients to not be in withdrawal for a full day. If they come in and they dose every day, it keeps them out of withdrawal, and that's the beginning of healing. And we know it takes a minimum of a year in treatment before the brain really does start to effectively heal. So that's like that's as far as like the time and treatment, minimum of 1 year. But as far as like how long it'll be before you notice a difference, is that, I think that's part of your question too. And that's a great question. And when patients come in on their intake, when the, you know, their first day in treatment, because of methadone, there's a stacking effect of doses. And so you have to kind of, the old expression is you start low and go slow. So you start at low doses and then you gradually increase over maybe 2 or 3 weeks easily it takes before you get to what we would call a maintenance dose, a dose that they can be on for 1, 2, or 3 years. You know, while their brain is physically changing. I mean, you're physically changing, altering the brain structure, you know, during that time. But it does take time. And that's one of the big frustrations we've noticed, like with our patients from Trinidad and Pueblo, is they come into treatment and it's really common to get frustrated because it's not a quick fix. You don't get to that maintenance dose right away. Like, as I said, it takes weeks. And so what'll happen is the dose is too low. They're going to go through withdrawal later in the day. We can prescribe the medicines for that, but it's just going to happen. And so a lot of patients do get frustrated and drop out. That happens in Denver when patients live a block away from clinics. But if patients live, you know, more than three, you know, over an hour drive one way from the clinic, we see that dropout rate increase even more. And we've noticed that the patients from Trinidad are dropping out earlier in you know, just at higher rates than they do locally. Don?
I want to comment on one thing, which is, this is why I think, as we've thought through this, this is why we've proposed a detox and a methadone clinic together. Because we really want to make sure that patients get the best shot at coming off of fentanyl or coming off whatever drug that they have, and then getting a smooth transition into treatment to really improve the chance that we retain those patients in treatment. And I think Steve's point is such a human one. If any of us could imagine that you had to drive on a daily basis an hour and a half back and forth to see your doctor and keep a job or fulfill family obligations or do anything, I think all of us would be somewhat hard pressed to do that, or at least would be using a lot of unproductive time that we could be spent really reforming bonds, getting a job, all these other things that both me and Steve view as metrics of recovery. At the end of the day, addiction medicine is somewhat scientific, but I'll tell you, it's the most human aspect of medicine, because how we measure success is you've patched up things with your family. You suddenly are having a job, right? You suddenly are not spending all your money on illicit drugs. You're not stealing anymore, right? These are very, very human metrics that we use to actually measure the success that our patients are having. So it's really something that, and me and Steve, I think can sympathize a lot with what's been said about methadone clinics, because both of us have had those same impressions before. But again, having now worked in addiction medicine, having seen the success stories that we can have with patients, this really is one of the best values and most miraculous aspects of medicine I've had the pleasure of being a part of, which is why I think both Steve and I are so passionate about making sure that every community in our state has access to this life-saving, you know, life-saving treatment.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Tony Hess.
Yes, thanks for being here, guys. I was curious if you've talked to our jail here, our justice center, and talked to them about possibly helping our inmates transition into the real world, so to speak.
Absolutely. That is an absolutely fantastic question, Commissioner Hass. I really appreciate that. Now, we work with jails all the time. We've had a very longstanding relationship with the Pueblo County Jail. We've treated patients, our patients that are in jail, and then even start treatment for other patients while they're incarcerated. And I've actually treated one patient. I treated my first patient in Los Angeles County Jail about 2 weeks ago. It was a pregnant patient, actually, that we just started her on buprenorphine because that was really all we had. And once again, if we had had a clinic here in Trinidad, we could have, you know, we would have had the option of methadone. I like to have both tools, right? I like to be able to, because for some people, it's more appropriate to treat with buprenorphine or Suboxone. Suboxone is the trade name if you're not familiar with the term buprenorphine. But no, working with jails is critical. That's kind of a sideline passion of mine. As you may or may not know, there are mandates in the fentanyl bill that was passed that requires jails to offer methadone. And so I've been through the consortium, we've been working with and then working with JBBS at getting methadone into jails and mostly rural jails. The urban jails, along the Front Range, they've got it down. Many of them have been offering it for years now, but these rural jails are struggling. Obviously, I mean, they really need help, and so that'd be a key component to what we would do. I have experience. We got our first patient from Fremont County Jail today, so lots of experience with that.
Good, and I guess I don't know if you know, but Commissioner Lopez and I have been pretty passionate about this. From the day we got elected, we were working on MAP facilities here in Los Angeles County. And I know that we have one, but we struggle to get what we need to operate that MAP van. The other one, we had two there for a while that would service both Huerfano and Los Angeles County. And we've lost one of those. And it becomes quite a challenge and it's expensive. Where is the funding coming from for this project?
Don, do you want to speak to the funding issue?
Sure. Yep. So right now, Signal is your MSO, and Signal has extended a grant. And how me and Steve connected was they said, we would love to have someone in Southern Colorado. And I had first approached my contacts at Mount San Rafael, and I've done work there before, building addiction, some addiction treatment infrastructure, but more basically better pain infrastructure. So I've worked with the hospital, partnerships and relationships with the hospital, and discussed whether there's a need. And every clinician I've spoken with there says our need is significant. And then I said, well, do we have someone who has the expertise to do that? And they said, right now we do not. And I went then and found Steve, because I knew Steve was in Pueblo. Me and Steve have known each other from our work across the state for years. And I said, Steve, I think that there's a really tremendous need that can be served. And then I was working with Signal to try to find a recipient for this grant to stand up more treatment in Southern Colorado. So the first year of this will be funded by Signal, who will pay for a brick and mortar building, who will pay for a lot of the staff time, who will pay for a lot of these different pieces. And then what I'd say is that if we are successful, this will be self-sustaining. And the reason why I say self-sustaining is because I'm not a fan of running things on grants. I think that just like the rest of medicine, we want to build a sustainable, durable thing that lasts with your community for decades and is a place that gets your community members back into recovery, whether they're coming out of the carceral system or whether they are coming directly from the community, as we really want to be a touch point that patients can use and that your community can refer to. Again, for detox services, right? As people are trying to come off, and this doesn't have to just be opioids, it can be alcohol, it could be other methamphetamine, it could be other substances that are impacting our communities across the state, but then also just having that ability to provide what is the most intensive, most effective treatment for opioid use disorder is something that I think really every community in Colorado needs if we hope to curb these overdose numbers. So the funding will come from Signal, but then too, in that year plus, really Steve and I, our job will be to figure out how to make this a reliable business that pays taxes, that sustains itself, and that at the end of the day is a good community member.
So this funding would build the brick and mortar building, or would you be looking for a facility?
We'd look to rent probably. We've looked at both, but Steve, maybe you can update us on that.
I don't know if you know him, but John Reyes is a realtor here in Trinidad, and I spent a day with him actually, and he showed me lots and lots of different properties for rent and sale, even some vacant land that he thought might be appropriate. So it kind of gave me a decent idea of what's available. I'm sure we can find something, and he's, I don't know if you know him, but he seems like a fantastic guy. I'm really looking forward to working more with him. And then also Commissioner Haas, I don't know, do you know Rita Torres? Have you worked with her as far as MAT and jails and things?
I do know of her, yes.
Yeah, she's the one that I've been connecting with most recently. So she would be a big partner of ours, she and her organization. And then obviously we would also want to partner with, Health Solutions, Crossroads, other organizations that are in the community. We work with them in Pueblo they have a facility in Colorado Springs as well. So, we have a working relationship. I trained their main doc in Pueblo at their opioid treatment program, a few years ago. So, yeah, we've got a good working relationship with people.
Thank you.
I think, one of the comments that you make is working with the local providers is so imperative and important. Health Solutions, as I serve on the opioid Region 19, I know Dr. Stater, you mentioned that grants, but nonetheless, through the Region 19, we're going to have funding for the next 18 years. So why not? If that is the case, apply for a couple of grants, at least one, because it's going to be there. And then we have been working pretty close as well with the BHA, both with the total team. I'm part of the statewide group that works directly on that. And one of the things that we continue to tell them is okay to have this behavioral health administration in Denver, but don't forget Los Angeles County. Send the services where they're really needed. And so I think this whole concept and service is so imperative. I like to hear from our, and I'm going to put her on the spot, Ms. Gonzalez, and see if she has any comments, any questions for you all, as I know she carries a huge responsibility within the county, two counties, when it comes to this. Commissioner Tony has made reference to the Amazons. So I don't know, Kim, do you have any comments, any questions?
Sorry, I would be there today, but I'm in Denver in a conference for NACHO this week. So I thank you for the kind words earlier, Commissioner Lopez. And I have spoken with Dr. Strader and Steve Young, Dr. Young, a couple weeks ago about their opportunities for the community. We discussed what they can bring to the community, what they can offer, who they're going to work with, just making sure that they've worked with our hospital, with Rita Torres at the jail, and actually it's both jails for Los Animas and Huerfano, if I remember correctly. So I know there's a lot of benefits to what they're want to bring to the community. There's a lot of, uncertainty, I can understand that. And I think with the challenge we have in the difference in the drugs coming into our communities and the potency, I think that's where we have to look at what is going to be effective. And that's where Dr. Schrader and Dr. Young are really educating myself going forward, as well as opening my eyes to my biases that I've had with the different drug treatments as well. So, but I'm glad that we were able to have this work session so that everybody could, you know, ask questions and understand the difference in the drug treatments going forward and the opportunities that are available.
Thank you, Kim.
And Kim, we just want to, I'm sorry, Commissioner.
No, go ahead, Dr. Young.
Well, I was just wanting to thank Kim for, you know, I think, you know, she really was the driver of this meeting. We, like I said, we met with her a few weeks ago, and she's obviously forward thinking, innovative, and a real asset to the two counties. And as I understand it, the next step is for us to meet with community partners, you know, which we look forward to that. And I think hopefully Kim can kind of help with that as well.
Yes, absolutely. We want to make sure that the community is ready. The community understands what would be coming if it is accepted into the community, that it's not just something that is brought in and not welcomed. I think there's a lot of education that needs to go, not just to this group that's on today, but to the community partners, for example, our Partners for Drug-Free Community. We are also going to invite those that used to be part of our MAT expansion work, which Dr. Schrader was on with that a few years back with us when we were spearheading the MAT expansion in Trinidad or Los Animas and Huerfano County. So we're going to bring another group together to have some more conversations, because there are a lot of questions. And there's a lot of stigma behind treatment for SUD and OUD. And I think it's getting the education to the community, to individuals, and how this is effective to individuals being treated going forward.
And I really believe the success of a substance abuse center, if you will, whatever title that's going to be at the very end, is going to be the groundwork that is going to be done in the front end, creating the goodwill and information and education. You know, one of the things that we're doing with the Region 19, we are pushing education, 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 and that information has to go out there, because certainly I'm not the expert, but we have experts within the group, within the providers. And I think when the community understands what services could be coming out of here, would be incredible. And that I think, as Dr. Stater mentioned, that's going to be the success of the program. And then now you have the distance of 100 miles, you know, just one way that would be eliminated. And I was going to ask a question, Dr. Stater. You mentioned that you were a hospitalist at Manson Rayfield Hospital. How many of the people that are actually in this state go to the emergency room for immediate service, and are they provided the services that they need?
Yeah, and I'll just say that I've done work with Mount Sinai Rafael Hospital. I've never actually been on staff there, but I've worked with many of the staff members, and Dr. Norris, Abigail Norris, has been a friend ever since we worked there, and has helped advise us as we looked to come into the community. And I think she was the one who made many introductions, including possibly a reintroduction to Ms. Gonzalez. But what I will say is that emergency departments have seen a tremendous amount of substance use and substance use disorders. It's one of our most common complaints. And it's something that traditionally we have done a very poor job of managing. The whole field of medicine has done a poor job of managing substance use disorders. Because when you think about it, it's one of our oldest diseases. We've had it ever since antiquity, right? Where we've been brewing beer and experimenting with substances. But the field of addiction medicine, where you have specialists like Steve and I, who actually have committed our careers to doing it is actually one of our newest specialties. Let me think, Steve, when was it approved? It's less than 20 years old. And it's also, there's only 6,000 of us across the country. So really, I think that we view it as one of our core missions is to educate everyone about the fact that this is not a death sentence. This is something which is a very, very treatable disease. We can have really, really wonderful outcomes with patients, and we can really rehabilitate communities in a way that before we've not appreciated. So, it's really a pleasure. And in, I'd say, the team, one of the people I'm very eager to work with is Kim Lucero, with my emergency department colleagues who are in the ED, with the people in the Mount San Rafael Clinic, now that Dr. Norris is, as I know, had her fifth child. I think she's taking a bit of a step back. So to make sure that we in our community are a place that those hospitals, clinics, et cetera, can look to and use as a resource or for education is something that I think we're both deeply committed to. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, thank you. And I want to give a shout out to Dr. Norris. She and I had about an hour conversation on this whole concept. And I'm glad that the conversation is coming 360 on this whole thing. What I would like to do at this point in time, I think we have enough information. So if you wouldn't mind sharing the slides with us, and I see Mr. Doran Camp has a question, that would really be great. And then depending on your time, I would like to also make an invitation at our next Board of County Commissioners meeting at the regular board to do, I was thinking Mr. Doran Camp, when we meet at 10 o'clock, I mean at 9 o'clock in the morning, they can have a presentation 20 minutes if they wanted to give a synopsis of this meeting. I think that would really be great as well. But I know, Phil, you have a question, sir?
I do, and you may have already answered this question, but what kind of time frame are you looking at? As far as if you can put a facility in place in Trinidad, what kind of time frame? Can't hear me?
Yeah, yes, I can hear you. So we have grant funding already available. For example, if we wanted through Signal, we can come and potentially, open we have funding for a clinic. But that's not the right way to open a clinic. And both me and Steve are very committed to doing things the right way with community support. We've heard horror stories from places where people have come, outsiders, and just opened a clinic and said, okay, well, now we're serving people. And the community feels blindsided. So that is not our intent. If I could say, we want to have a clinic and detox open as soon as possible with community support. And that last piece is really the important one. Signal already has allocated us funding, and really we're waiting for the ultimate decision makers, which is the community, to say, yes, this is something that we want and we want to partner with. But our grant ends next June to really start spending down this funding. And then after that June, we'd have to find other funding sources to at least cover our startup costs. So that's just something to put in the back of our brains, is that we actually have funding to get us to June, through next June. So we have basically 11 months to hopefully gain community support to really start finding and refitting a hospital to do our hiring, and then to open our doors to patients who might need our services. So that's, I think, the timeline that we're looking at, as we really love to be able to serve patients within the next 11 months. But more important than doing it fast is doing it right.
I think that's such a great response. I would really take the recommendation from Ms. Gonzalez to get the partners together, have a work session with them. And I'm also going to recommend that you meet with City Council. The City of Trinidad City Council, do a presentation to them. That would really be great. And we're going to leave the door open for you. I believe we have a meeting next Tuesday. Am I correct, Mr. Doran?
That's correct.
Okay, next Tuesday at 9 o'clock. So you would be able to do a presentation 20 minutes at the meeting right within, to provide once again for this is kind of a work session for us, but the more proactive the information goes out and disseminated, the information, the education, so on, I think the community can embrace a project such as this one, and there is your success.
We're committed to doing so. I'll have to check my schedule. I might be on a plane back from our family reunion. But if we cannot make this one, I would ask politely for the next one, and we will make sure
absolutely.
That we are.
Absolutely. I'm just putting it out there that we have a meeting next week and next Tuesday at 9 a.m. And so certainly you're more than welcome to join us at any one of those meetings. So unless we have any other questions, we want to say thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for all the information. Incredible. I think for me personally, as I began to serve on the opioid task force, Kim said it best. That stigma began to, for me, it was a book. I opened it up and I began to read. And then you begin to understand. So that makes sense now. So to our guests, any other comments, any closing remarks?
I just want to say thank you for hosting this. And I will be in touch with everybody to get the Partners for Drug-Free Community together and get invites to everybody as well. And just keep moving forward to get this opportunity into the community.
And Kim, it would be great if you reach out to the school districts.
Okay.
A representative from each one of the school districts to include a college. You never sure. know what we have going on. Okay?
Absolutely. Appreciate right. it.
Thank you, Kim.
Dr. Stater, Commissioner Haas, go ahead.
I just said thank you, Kim, and thank you, Mr. Stater and Mr. Young.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening and great to hear, and looking forward to hearing more from all of you. Thank you so much. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Good night.